Breaking news now on Fox News Channel. First, President Trump yesterday saying his attitude toward Bashar al-Assad in Syria has changed. And today, in the last 30 minutes, another sign. Secretary of State Tillerson announcing that, quote, steps are underway to organize an international coalition to remove the murderous Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad from power following this week's apparent chemical attack in the war-torn country.
This is not a civil war in Syria. That's probably the first thing we heard, and we heard it over and over again. It is not President Assad against his own people. It is President Assad and the Syrian people all together in unity against outside forces, outside mercenary forces, terror organizations. The names change every day or every other day to try to protect their identity and maybe keep the connection between the country that funded it and that group kind of a little bit more nebulous. But there are groups, mercenary forces, supported by Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, the United States, and underneath it, Israel, the state of Israel.
And underneath it, Israel, the state of Israel.
How can you justify calling all of us liars?
Sure.
Thank you.
I mean, there are certainly honest journalists amongst the very compromised establishment media. Let's start with your second question. So, international organizations on the ground. Tell me which ones are on the ground in eastern Aleppo. Yeah, okay, I'll tell you. There are none. There are none. These organizations are relying on the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which is based in Coventry, UK, and which is one man. They're relying on compromised groups like the White Helmets, which let's talk about the White Helmets. The White Helmets were founded in 2013 by a British ex-military officer. They have been funded to the tune of $100 million by the US, UK, and Europe and other states. They purport to be rescuing civilians in eastern Aleppo and Idlib, yet no one in eastern Aleppo has heard of them. And I say no one, bearing in mind that now 95% of these areas of eastern Aleppo are liberated. The White Helmets purport to be neutral, yet they can be found carrying guns and standing in the dead bodies of Syrian soldiers. And their video footage actually contains children that have been recycled in different reports. So you can find a girl named Aya who turns up in a report in month, say, August, and she turns up in the next month in two different locations. So they are not credible. The SOHR is not credible. Unnamed activists are not credible. Once or twice, maybe, but every time, not credible. So your sources on the ground, you don't have them. As for your agenda, not your, but the agenda of some corporate media, it is the agenda of regime change. How can the New York Times, I was reading it this morning, or how can Democracy Now!, which I was reading the other day, maintain until this day that this is a civil war in Syria? How can they maintain until this day that the protests were unarmed and nonviolent until, say, 2012? That is absolutely not true. How can they maintain that the Syrian government is attacking civilians in Aleppo when every person that's coming out of these areas occupied by terrorists is saying the opposite? How do I quantify the support of the Syrian people? The elections. In 2014, the Syrian people held elections. The point being, overwhelmingly, the people support President Assad. There are people that want change in the government. We're not pretending they don't want change. Everybody wants change. But in terms of support of the government, the point is they don't see President Assad as the problem. They see the problem as terrorism. They see elements of problems in the system that they have there. But President Assad, they don't see as the problem. They actually overwhelmingly support him. So I'm basing it on their choice in their leader, and I'm basing it on my interactions with people in Syria.
Steps are underway to organize an international coalition to remove the murderous Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad from power following this week's apparent chemical attack in the war-torn country.
Dude, America first! America first! Get that through your head! Dude, America first! America first! You heard that before? What? America first! America first! What the hell, man? Dude, America first! America first! To all of you, let me explain one damn thing. America, America, America. Dude, you understand? America, America, America. My point is America's first. America, America, America. What the hell, man? Whoa. globalists. No! Goblins. No! This is it. Everybody get ready! America first! America first! Get that through your head! Dude! America first! America first! You heard that before? What? America first! America first! Get that through your head! America first! America first!
Welcome to the Crypto Report. It's April the 9th, 2017, and this is the Crypto Report. I'm sure all of you will agree it has been a wild, wild week. We have gone from the awesome revelations that Susan Rice had purposely unmasked Trump and Trump's people's names on national security documents so that she could spy on the Trump campaign and the Trump transition team and so forth, and went straight into a war with Syria. And that's going to be the focus of most of the show this week, is the Syria nonsense. It was certainly an about face that took everyone by surprise. We had a whole campaign where Trump specifically promised the American people that he would not do this specific thing. He would not entangle us in any more of this regime change in Syria specifically. And that is exactly what has happened. And the excuse that Trump gave was that he was triggered by the images of the gassed babies. Of course, there is a lot more going on with this than what we are being told. I don't think any reasonable person really believes that a man in his 70s who is hard-nosed and cutthroat enough to have risen through the ranks of the real estate business and the entertainment business and such as Trump did, is really all that upset about some pictures of children with gas masks on their face, or not gas masks, but oxygen masks on their face, alleging that they have been doused with sarin gas, would inspire him to take us into war, which will only kill more children, and his actions allegedly already have. The response was to shoot some Tomahawk missiles at an airstrip in a town called Hama, which, according to most media reports, is a Christian village in Syria. And that they were actually needing that airbase to protect themselves from ISIS, which is another weird thing about this. You know, Trump has promised to bomb ISIS, or not bomb ISIS, but to destroy ISIS. He has yet to begin doing anything on that front, but he's already taken us into more of this regime change, nation-building nonsense that we have been engaged in for at least the last 16 years, in which most Americans, left, right, center, whatever, are sick of. You know, everybody but the neos on either side, the neocons and the neolibs, they love this stuff, but everyone else is sick to death of it. And there's a whole lot of back and forth going on across social media and in the blogs and the op-eds and so forth. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But let's start making a case here. Let's look at a story which allegedly would be unrelated to this. This is from the Jew York Slimes. And it's entitled, Trump Fires Warning Shot in Battle Between Bannon and Kushner. As he grappled on Thursday with his first major decision involving military action, a fed-up and frustrated President Trump turned to his two top aides and told them he'd had enough of their incessant knife fights in the media. Work this out, Mr. Trump said, according to two people briefed on the exchange. The admonition was aimed at Stephen K. Bannon, the tempestuous chief strategist, and Rance Priebus, the mild-mannered chief of staff, over a series of dust-ups with Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and senior advisor, and the top economic advisor, Gary D. Cohn. But they may not be able to. The president is said to be aware that a meaningful reconciliation will take work to achieve between Mr. Bannon, who sees himself as the keeper of Mr. Trump's campaign promises, and the competing ideologies of Mr. Kushner and Mr. Cohn, a longtime Wall Street executive and Democrat. Now, let's look at this now. Suddenly we have a power struggle, just shortly after Trump has taken office. There's this huge power struggle among his closest advisors. And the power struggle is between the people, two people who were very instrumental in helping him get elected. Well, of course, Bannon way more than Priebus. But Priebus, you know, once he was the nominee, Priebus was there for him. And these two Jews. And what these two Jews are pushing for is to continue to put the interests of Israel ahead of the interests of the United States and to continue with these endless wars of foreign aggression for all the myriad reasons that we always have them. You know, you've got your media reasons and you've got your real reasons. Now, of course, the media reasons, this is just a script. It's absolutely a script. When let's take the first Iraq war, Desert Storm, right? Well, it's, of course, it started off as Desert Shield, where they sent all the troops out there, and they drew a line in the sand, and they had the troops sit there on the just outside the border of Iraq, I believe in Saudi Arabia, if I remember correctly. And the red line was a date that the war would start if Iraq did not leave Kuwait. And of course, this was all about oil and geopolitical nonsense and had nothing to do with the reasons that they gave. And the reasons that they gave are very telling. If you remember, when Saddam Hussein decided he was fed up with the border conflict that he was having with Kuwait, they were claiming that a certain area of northern Kuwait was disputed. Hussein said it was Iraq land, and Kuwait said it was Kuwaiti territory. And it was one of the really, really oil-rich areas in that region. And so when Hussein, who, by the way, had been told, I believe by James Baker, who was the Secretary of State at the time, if I remember correctly, he had been told it was okay, go ahead. And immediately, the Jew media began showing all these propaganda films claiming that the Iraqi soldiers had stormed into the Kuwaiti hospitals and gone into the nursery area of the hospital and taken all the newborn babies out of their incubators and bashed their poor little baby brains on the floors and all that stuff, which all turned out later to be BS, as did the weapons of mass destruction nonsense. And so now we've got this narrative of they're not bashing the baby's brains out in the hospital. This evil Assad is purposely gassing them with sarin gas. And like I said, we have the pictures of the small children with oxygen masks on their face and all this. Well, even if that were a reason to go to war, which it is not. I mean, one of the memes that I saw on Daily Stormer in the comment sections of one of the articles about this is a big map of the United States with a Pepe frog on it, and it says, "Show me on the map where Syria hurt you." And of course, Syria hasn't hurt us at all. Another interesting thing about this is, where's the proof that Assad did this at all? You know, it's really not there. I mean, we have people alleging that the area was gassed, and for a minute, let's just assume that that's true. Not that it was gas necessarily, but that gas was released. Let's just assume that's true. Pretty much everyone agrees that what had just occurred was that an old ISIS munitions dump had been bombed. Now, a munitions dump is a place where all your munitions are dumped. I mean, it's a pretty simple concept. And so if ISIS were dumping their munitions in a big pile like that, and let's just say they had some sarin gas, had access to it, well, wouldn't they dump it there? Couldn't it have been set off by the bombing? But anyway, back to the Kushner Jew thing, Kushner versus Bannon thing. This is whether he acts on it. I believe this is Trump's ultimatum about Bannon and Kushner getting along. Whether he acts on it remains to be seen. Mr. Trump has often pondered making changes for several weeks or even months before making them, if he does at all. He has a high tolerance for chaos and a unique gift for creating it, and despite his famous "You're Fired" tagline from his show The Apprentice, an aversion to dismissing people, but this week, one that some of his aides consider the best of his presidency, was marred by fits, starts, and self-inflicted wounds, and the constant churn of news accounts of a White House at war with itself finally wore the president out, and a notice of the possible shakeup was a warning shot to his team to make adjustments. A spokesman for Mr. Trump, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, insisted that such accounts were untrue. "Once again, this is a completely false story driven by people who want to distract from the success taking place in this administration," she said in an emailed statement. "The president's pick for the Supreme Court, a decision that has generational impact, was confirmed today. We hosted multiple foreign leaders this week, and the president took bold and decisive military action against Syria last night. The only thing we're shaking up is the way Washington operates as we push the president's aggressive agenda forward." What a load of crap. I mean, this Syria thing basically wrecks the agenda. You know, the agenda was America first, stupid. You know, just like when Bill Clinton was running and he won so decisively, you have to know what your agenda is, what your theme is. You basically have to become your own meme. And what all this means, I guess, is knowing what's important, promising to do something about it, and hopefully following through. And if President Trump were sticking to his theme, if he were becoming the meme of himself, there would be no war in Syria. No war in Syria. And yet, we have one. So, just in case you haven't caught on to what I'm getting at here, it's looking like this is a war in the White House between agents of international Jewry and the remnants of white America and Trump and all his campaign promises. And it's not just people like me who are saying this. Here's a little snippet from that was written by Hadding Scott over at National Socialist Worldview. He writes, "On 6 April 2017, Michael Savage, nay Wiener," yes, that is Michael Savage's real name. He's Michael Wiener. Unknown whether he's related to Anthony Weiner, doubtful, you know, other than being a fellow member of the tribe. But, you know, we have Michael Savage, who is this huge media Jew and who is a total supporter of Israel. Now, let's see what he has to say. says, and Michael Savage, nay Wiener, a radio personality heard across the United States, gave an anti-war broadcast that began by observing, on the 100th anniversary of the United States' entry into the First World War, that Woodrow Wilson had been reelected in 1916 on the premise that he had kept the United States out of the European War and would continue to do so, but was then coaxed into war in spite of his original intentions, with disastrous results. He points out correctly that we really do not know who in Syria used sarin. He invokes common sense as an argument against assuming that Assad was responsible for the sarin deaths. He states repeatedly that it makes no sense to blame Assad for the gassing. Savage answers to two distinct, but in practice, intertwined questions. The two questions are, who wants war with Russia and who wants to destroy Syria? Savage initially blames the generals and the military-industrial complex for wanting war. Then he blames the progressives and the liberals. He gets closer to the truth when he mentions the neocon ventriloquists in the media, since neoconservatism is a Jewish movement. He mentions Jeff Zucker and Wolf Blitzer. Blitzer at one time was an employee of AIPAC. Who wants war with Russia? George Soros and the left, he says. Savage points out that the ex-chief rabbi of Israel has compared the sarin gassings to the Holocaust as a way of agitating for war. To answer the question of who wants Syria destroyed, Savage finally declares at the end of the first hour, Israel benefits most if Assad is gone. The constituencies for war against Russia and war against Syria are both Jewish. He links the change in Trump's policy to the reduction of conservative Catholic Steve Bannon's status within the administration. Quote, it seems to me that the liberals and the neocons are prevailing, and they both have Trump's ears. Unquote. Michael Savage has not always criticized his fellow Jews' warmongering. In 2003, he was such a noteworthy warmonger that he was rewarded with a primetime show on MSNBC, replacing Phil Donahue after it was decided that MSNBC would line up with the rest of the news media in supporting the war against Iraq. At some point, perhaps after witnessing the overthrow and brutal murder of Muammar Gaddafi, Michael Savage became a critic of neoconservative warmongering and has linked it to Israeli interests. He has been doing that at least since 2013. The broadcast of 6 April 2017, however, marks a new level of frankness and clarity for Savage. In terms of declaring the responsibility of the Jewish state, he implies that he has held back in the past. Quote, but there's another element, and you know I'm reluctant to say it, because of the fear I have in saying what I am going to say to you. But I guess I'm past the point of holding back almost anything, he says. Let's hope that the so-called alt-right will not be less clear and less bold than this Jewish talk show host in declaring that Jewish interests motivate these wars. Our people need to know this so that they will recognize the pattern of lying and know what not to believe. So, yeah, I mean, there you have it. You have one of the top media Jews who is one of the most vocal proponents of the Jewish state of Israel basically telling you that it's Israel and the Jews that are doing this and not trying to act like it's actually a good thing. So, yeah, I mean, If Michael Wiener Savage can see it and say it, then we certainly can. Now, I mean, there are tons of other theories going on here, like 4D chess and all that, which I will address later. And this ain't 4D chess. It's maybe half-D checkers, but it's not 4D chess. This is basically retardation, and I don't believe that this was Trump's idea. Of course, I also don't believe the nonsense reasons the media is giving for it. Like here in The Sun is claiming that Trump did it because Ivanka came to him and said, "Daddy, please bomb Syria for me." And the headline says, "Proud of my father. Trump's dramatic U-turn on airstrikes in Syria was sparked by daughter Ivanka's heartbreak after gas attack." Ivanka Trump had previously shared that she was heartbroken and outraged by the attack. Donald Trump's dramatic U-turn on taking military action in Syria was sparked by the heartbreak of his daughter Ivanka, it has been claimed. The U.S. president, who had previously been opposed to the U.S. launching airstrikes on Syria, announced that the gas attack could not be tolerated and ordered 59 missile bombing of the airbase involved in the fatal chemical assault. Trump's stance hardened after his 35-year-old daughter condemned the attack on Wednesday morning, with Ivanka writing that she was heartbroken and outraged by the images coming out of Syria following the atrocious chemical attack yesterday. Hours later, Trump himself spoke out, saying, "Yesterday's chemical attack against innocent people, their deaths, were an affront to humanity. These heinous actions by the Assad regime cannot be tolerated." And, you know, we've got these tweets that Ivanka put out that morning. Like, here's one, April 5th. "Heartbroken and outraged by the images coming out of Syria following the atrocious chemical attack yesterday." And then another one on April 7th, "The times we are living in call for difficult decisions. Proud of my father for refusing to accept these horrendous crimes against humanity." And then, of course, you know, we have pictures that claim to be child victims of gas attacks. But, I mean, the only evidence we've got here is that these children are on hospital beds having oxygen masks on their faces. And there's millions of reasons. Well, not literally millions, but there's a myriad of reasons why a child or an adult or whoever would be on a hospital bed with a mask over their faces to give them oxygen right after some type of strike like this. I mean, even just smoke inhalation. I mean, anybody who's ever seen a house burn down knows, you know, the firemen come out and everything, and the victims and the firemen and whoever else that get exposed to too much smoke. And I mean, just too much smoke. That's all it takes. And they'll put these oxygen masks on them to get their oxygen back up. I mean, I'm not even saying that I don't believe it was sarin gas. I'm just saying these pictures and all this evidence, it's just crap. I mean, they keep saying, "Oh, Assad did this, Assad did that." And it's nonsense. It's just as much nonsense as this narrative that they've been spinning for years now, that what's been going on in Syria is a civil war. Well, let's define our terms here, for God's sake. A civil war, to just get right down as simple and easy to understand as I possibly can, a civil war is when you have a country and a huge chunk of the citizens of that country feel that the country should be run in X manner. And then on the other side, you have another huge block of citizens who feel that the country should be run in Y manner. And both sides feel so strongly about this, and the positions are so diametrically opposed, that they go to war with one another. Now, that's not what's happening in Syria. All this nonsense that you hear about a Syrian civil war and the rebels and all this other stuff, no, it's none of that. And if you read the fine print, nobody claims that it is. The people who are at war with Syria are outside terrorists who are in there committing terrorism to agitate the media and everybody on the globe to do exactly what we've just done. I mean, whoever did it, this gas attack has caused the man that we elected, who promised to never try to oust Assad or try to enact regime change or any of that, and who also promised with every other time that he opened his mouth that right away we were going to take out ISIS. Well, we just bombed the people who are fighting ISIS. And like I said earlier, this town, this Hama, is allegedly a Christian village. And from the media reports I've read, they needed that airstrip. That airstrip and the stuff around it was what they were using to defend their Christian village from ISIS. And so Donald Trump, who cares so much about the children and who cares so much about the Christians and all this, has just potentially subjected these people to the worst kind of hell on earth that you can imagine. Just go look at all these other pictures that triggered Trump during the campaign, that triggered the rest of us, with these ISIS monkeys standing on the necks of babies and disemboweling women, and the reports of the mass rapes, the mass beheadings, and just on and on. This is the people that America has been supporting and funding and arming in not just Syria, but in Egypt and Libya and all over. And these are the people that Trump promised to crush once and for all. And now he has left this little village of Christians vulnerable. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here white-knighting or heartbroken over all this. Whether the brown people are Christians or Muslims or any, that doesn't matter to me. That doesn't make one bit of difference to me. They're brown people. They belong in their own countries, not in our countries. And what they do over there in their own countries, while it may be heartbreaking to see or whatever, it's not a vital national interest of the United States to go and take care of these things. We can't afford it. It destabilizes the world. It puts America at risk. and we have this news article here claiming that this was all done because Ivanka was upset. But no matter which way you look at this, at least if just judging on the events of the last few days, it would appear that all the people who went and voted for Trump thought that they were trying to elect, or thought that they had in fact elected a nationalist, at least a civic nationalist billionaire who was going to get in there and do the business of the American people. But instead, it appears that they have elected his liberal, spoiled brat daughter and her kike husband. That's who we've that's who's running the country. But seriously, I mean, what are the alternatives to what I'm suggesting? I mean, I know a lot of people have said, oh, this is very unlikely that Kushner's whispering in his ear and got him to do this and blah, blah, blah. But what are the other alternatives? There's the retarded 4D chess nonsense. And what people mean by that is that, like, this is some long range and extremely convoluted secret plan of Trump's that we're going to attack this Syria to raise his poll numbers a little bit. And then he'll be able to get those Democrats to quit filibustering everything. And he'll be able to get those Freedom Coalition conservative types to go along with his health care bill. And he'll get the wall that he wants. And just on and on. And, you know, his appointments will get put through, and they'll stop claiming that he's a Russian puppet because he did something that the Russians didn't like or whatever. This is all ridiculous nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Now, anyone who is a serious person knows that other serious people don't go into these types of things like this. I mean, if he had some kind of a plan like that, there's a million other things he could have done that would have been better. He has just wrecked himself with his base. The people who voted for him do not like this. And now I know the media is painting a really rosy picture of it. Even the left media is saying they like this. But it's really shown you who the shills on Fox News are, because, you know, you've got, and some of them were pretty obvious anyway. And, you know, when they're shilling for your guy, it's always a more comfortable thing than when they're shilling for whatever, you know, your opponent or some program that you're just not into. But the thing is, when they shill as obviously as some of these people do, like the first one that comes to mind is this Jeanine Pirro, who does I don't know if it's Saturday or Sunday night, she does a show on Fox. And, you know, she's has just been so overboard on the shilling that I knew, you know, something's up with her. This is a narrative that they've got going on over there. But it's fine because they support Trump and he's trying to do the right thing and all this. But now, on her latest show, she gets Geraldo Rivera on there, and the two of them absolutely agree that they're so proud of Trump, that this is the greatest thing ever. It's so awesome and wonderful that we're shooting these multi-million dollar Tomahawk missiles at some little airbase in some little village in some little shithole country in the Middle East at the cost of who knows what to us. To save these children, you know, despite the fact that these Tomahawk missiles killed some children. And what's so bad about gassing anyway? I mean, seriously, would you rather, if you were in one of these zones, would you rather inhale a little bit of gas or have a Tomahawk missile dropped on you, or maybe have some of these, some of this depleted depleted uranium weapons, these radioactive mortar rounds and tank rounds and such that they fire into everything, you know, land right next to your house so that whoever survives, you know, grows extra arms and giant tumors on their necks and stuff. I mean, the thing about gassing is, first of all, it got a bad rap in World War I because it scared the crap out of everybody. And understandably, I mean, the only way to defend against it is to see it coming and put on a gas mask or whatever. And depending on the kind of gas nowadays, that might not even do it because, you know, some of these agents will actually be absorbed through the skin and such. So you'd have to be covered from tip to toe with like a hazmat suit and all that. But the survival rate on these gassings has always been very high. I mean, Hitler was gassed twice, I believe, but I know this is just off the top of my head, but I know for a fact once, and it blinded him and he got better. And, you know, you got these Jews who claim that they were gassed over and over and over and over during the Holocaust, and they're all still around bitching about it. But yeah, I mean, don't we have these soldiers coming back all the time? The one that are missing limbs and you know have all these other problems from being shot with bullets. I mean, it's always been the craziest thing. People get weird about what they're afraid of when it comes to this type of stuff. I mean, one of the interesting things that I noticed growing up was how many people were more afraid of a knife than they were a gun, you know, being stabbed than being shot. And that always... And it always perplexed me because it's easier to defend yourself from a knife attack than a gun attack, for sure. And, you know, a large caliber bullet, unless you're being stabbed with like, you know, something, a knife with a really big blade, like 6 inches or more, a large caliber bullet, and by that I mean like 38 special or bigger, is almost always going to do way more damage, even if you're talking about the old round ball stuff. So, I mean, you know, this is just all playing off people's nonsense ideas that they have in their heads. But as far, you know, as the potential reasons go, Andrew Anglin wrote an article, I believe the morning after the Tomahawk missile strikes, where he listed out what the basic options were that everybody's talking about what could have been behind this. And let's just go through them real fast. And I'm just going to list the options. I'm not going to read, you know, the whole analysis of each one. But I think after everybody's had a couple of days to think about this, that reasonable people will see how silly most of these options are. One, Trump saw the pictures of gas baby meme, and it made him feel so sad that he decided to risk starting World War III with Russia to avenge the gas baby meme. And that is the official story. Number two, there's some kind of complex backroom dealings, Machiavellian trickery going on, with this whole thing being staged to prove that Trump isn't a Russian shill. Okay. Number three, Trump was part of a conspiracy from the beginning, and all Jews just pretended to be against him. Now we're just seeing his real self. Number four, there is some kind of political favor trading going on. Number five, this is some kind of a setup to blame Israel and the Jews for manufacturing a false flag gas attack in Syria, which will lead to the entire war being called off permanently. Number six, Trump is being manipulated by people around him in some straightforward manner, with Jared Kushner, the Jew, in particular, gaining influence over his mind. This is also an official story. It's like official story number two. And Anglin doesn't think it makes any sense, and I totally respect Anglin. He's a very insightful guy, but I kind of disagree with him on this. I think that out of all the possible stories, this is the one that makes the most sense. Number seven, some kind of mind control beam or nanobots or something. And then eight, Trump is being manipulated by Jews and the deep state intelligence community in a devious manner involving threats and or blackmail. Now, Anglin says this is by far the most likely option. And I agree, except that I think that this goes hand in hand with option six, that he's being manipulated by people around him in some straightforward manner with Kushner, the Jew, gaining influence over his mind. Now, I think that the most likely scenario here is the combination of Kushner becoming his worm tongue, you know, the Jew whispering in his ear, and the deep state manipulating him. It's all part of, or they're both part of the same thing. But anyhow, I think this is going to be a pretty short show today, comparatively speaking. I mean, we usually go 3 hours, but I decided to do this one by myself today with no comedy bits and no guests or anything like that to just kind of talk about this. And I may hit on some other things later, but I think this is a good time to go ahead and take the break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about this. I'm going to address questions and comments from the Daily Stormer BBS, and I may talk about one or two other things. So we'll see you right after this.
You're listening to The Crypto Report. We'll be right back after this break.
We understand the law, the blood. is essential that the world does more to deter Assad from committing future murderous atrocities. But the action taken last night needs to be followed by a broader strategy to end Syria's civil war. I hope this administration will move forward in a way that is both strategic and consistent with our values. And I also hope that they will recognize that we cannot in one breath speak of protecting Syrian babies and in the next close America's doors to them.
Welcome back to the Crypto Report.
That's right, my fellow silly cattle goyim. You're here to serve international Jewry. That is your only purpose. That is the only reason you're allowed to even continue to exist. You may ask, when will this end? When will we stop having these endless wars? When will we stop being told that we must march or die? That we must spill our blood and waste our treasure fighting for Israel? Well, I'll tell you when. There's a very simple answer to this. It's when one of two things happens. It's either when every single Jew on this planet is relocated, voluntarily or involuntarily, to the place they belong, that shithole in the Middle East called Israel, that they whined and cried for a century until we gave it to them. Okay, when they all go there, when we no longer have Jews in our Western countries owning our media, influencing our old people and our young people with the degenerate, lying media, when we no longer have Jews ensconced in academia teaching our young people to hate themselves, to hate their ancestors, to hate their history, to hate their own nation. When we no longer have Jews whispering in the ears of all our leaders on every side of everything. When all those Jews are back in Israel and we've cut off all the aid and all the freebies and all the military packages. Or when there's just not another single Jew on this planet somehow. That's when this will stop. The Jews are the key to every problem that we have. All these societal problems that we have are easily solved but for the influence of the Jews. Once you can get that through your head, the path forward becomes clear. We have to raise awareness among our own people with these Jews, and that's going to be hard. They've been running academia since the early 1900s, as well as the media, as well as being ensconced in nearly every non-elected position in our state and federal governments, as well as running our judiciary. You know, it's just, it's and all the corporations that they have managed to manipulate their way onto the boards. David Duke often explains it quite well by using Disney as an example. Walt Disney detested the Jews. He saw them for the degenerate, low moral influence that they had on our society. And, you know, Disney was a purveyor of family entertainment, most of which was based on myths and fairy tales of our own people. And Walt Disney died. And eventually a Jew got himself onto the board of directors. And then another opening comes, and he's like, hey, I've got this really good friend here, and boy, he's the perfect guy. And boom, another Jew's on there. And it keeps happening that way until they have enough Jews to make a Jew the CEO. Of course, the first one was Michael Eisner. Of course, now we've got this Michael Iger, both Jews. But Eisner, the first thing he did was got in there and established this touchstone so that Disney was making R-rated movies with lots of violent and sexual content. They were just calling it Touchstone. And then they started browning up our fairy tales and such. Not even fairy tales, our fairy tales. They started shifting to Pocahontas and Aladdin and all these others. Until finally we get to the point we're at now where they remake Beauty and the Beast into like a gay butt sex porn or whatever. So, you know, it's like this all over. These Jews, they use nepotism and undue influence. For as long as they've been doing these other things, they've been financing our seminaries to get control over the religious goyim. You know, that's why in my lifetime, the preachers have changed their line from Jews rejected Christ, Jews killed Christ, and therefore Jews, unless they repent and accept Christ, will go to hell. That's what they used to say. And now they say, the Jews are God's special chosen people, so they don't even have to accept the Son of God. They go to heaven automatically, and even worse than that. If you don't worship these Jews and do every single thing they ask you to, you will be cursed. You will go to hell. So, you know, now we have the religion of Jews. This Jewish problem, it is truly the crux of every problem that we have. If we didn't have these Jews intervening, we wouldn't have the Negro problem we have. If we didn't have these Jews intervening, we wouldn't have the illegal alien problem that we have. If we didn't have these Jews intervening, we wouldn't have let in untold numbers of swarthy refugees from third world shitholes who now commit mass rape and terrorist attacks on a regular, if not daily, basis in the West. All these things have been pushed and funded and supported and sustained by the Jews. And I don't want to hear this, well, not all Jews. It basically is all Jews. I mean, you'll run across these individuals, you're like, well, you say we run the world. I don't run anything. I own a little record store or whatever. Yeah. Now, you support your fellow Jews. I can count the people who self-identify as Jews and who will actually point out that the Jews are doing all these things. I could cut off a couple of fingers on my hand and count them all. You know, so it's there's no two ways. The crux of the problem here is Jews. But before we get back into the serious stuff, and I'm about to address your questions and comments. But before we do that, I guess I should bring up why the show is different today. There almost wasn't a show this week. There wasn't a show last week because of some confusion and scheduling conflicts among the crew and such. And it was kind of a last-minute thing. And so I just said, okay, take a hiatus and then we come back. But then I fell ill for most of the week with the most horrible flu ever. I mean, I really, at one point I thought I was going to die. I was so sick. And then shortly after that, I was actually wishing I would. I was so sick. I didn't post a word to Daily Stormer or do much of anything else for an entire week. And then this Syria thing happened, and I didn't have, you know, I was kind of thinking, well, as bad as I hate to do it, I may just have to take 2 weeks off. But I started feeling better Friday, I guess. And, the Syria thing was raging and all that. And I thought, well, you know, even though I haven't scheduled a guest and all that, it's just irresponsible for me to not do a show this week. And it is my goal to do a show every week. It bothers me tremendously when something happens to where a show has to be skipped. But I'm doing it by myself today. So it's going to be shorter because let me tell you, this is, you may not think so, but sitting in front of a microphone and talking and talking and talking is not really something that everybody can do. And doing it by yourself is a bitch, man. I remember back when I was doing Hidden Mysteries Radio in Ghost Filial for a few weeks, I had to do the 2-hour Hidden Mysteries Radio by myself. And that, you know, when Ghost Filial, and when he finally came out of his coma, I went and saw him at the hospital, and he asked me if I was still doing the shows. And I said, oh, yeah, I've been putting one out every week. Of course, it was a twice-a-week show, but I was making sure and getting the Friday show out there anyway to keep us keep people listening. And he said, well, was it hard? And I said, you know, doing it by yourself? And I said, oh, no. It was the easiest 8 hours of work I ever did, you know, to put out a 2-hour show. So forgive me, please, for the brevity of this week's show. But, hey, at least you've got a show to listen to this week. So, you know, look for the silver lining, I suppose. But let's get back to it anyway. Been a lot of different people have weighed in on this, and the quickest way to go through it is just to read some of their tweets. Here is a tweet. It's interesting. Ann Coulter retweeted this one. This was a Donald Trump tweet from September 2nd, 2013. If the U.S. attacks Syria and hits the wrong targets, killing civilians, there will be worldwide hell to pay. Stay away and fix broken U.S. Wow. I wish we had somebody who felt that way as president. Wouldn't that be neat? Of course, one of the most insightful tweets about this was from Anne herself. She tweeted this April 6th. She says, Trump campaigned on not getting involved in Mideast. Said it always helps our enemies and creates more refugees. Then he saw a picture on TV. And she also points out that those of us who wanted us meddling in the Middle East voted for other candidates. That's pretty good. Let's see. Some guy named Jay Burton says, can we at least finish bringing peace, freedom, and prosperity to the people of Iraq before we start liberating the Syrians, too? And he links a CNN story that says, Mosul, 112 civilian bodies pulled from site of coalition airstrike. Here's a neat one. Salafist group RR al-Sham welcoming the strikes. Thanks, America. And they get this Arabic tweet with the translation, and it says, what say that America is the worst enemy of the Syrian people, but we welcome military strikes against the regime, whatever human measure, divine measure. And they've got another one here. It says, if America is serious about eradicating terrorism down, you'll see that terror is over automatically. The Syrian people want freedom, dignity, and justice. This is such a weird, circuitous thing. And as you heard at the beginning of the show, none of these people, none of these people who are allegedly on the ground are actually even there for the most part. Virginia Dare, V Dare, they quote tweeted Laura Ingraham. Her tweet said, President Trump just said this is in the vital national security interests of the U.S. And Virginia Dare responded, no one believes this. I don't know if they're correct that no one believes this, but I agree with them that most people don't, and it's retarded. This, you know, all we need is a good nationalist policy where we only allow white people to move here, and we deport all the illegals, and do something to get these muzzrats under control, and so forth. And it wouldn't matter what they do over there; we're not affected by it. Katie McHugh says, no sane person wants World War III with Syria, and no one wants their home flooded with raping refugees, yet we have no say in either of these things. And she also says, can someone explain to me why eye doctor Bashar al-Assad is our enemy as our government imports Muslim refugees who rape kids? Hashtag Syria hoax. Now, Laura Ingram tweeted, Raytheon McDonnell Douglas manufactures the Tomahawk cruise missiles. Cost $1.59 million each. And Virginia Dare responded, we can't afford the border wall, guys. Oh, and Virginia Dare had another good one. 16 years after September 11th, we're Al-Qaeda's Air Force. Someone named Cecilia Davenport, America first, except when we see sad pictures. Then here's a couple other neat tweets that Trump put out in August of 2013 when Obama was rattling the saber to go do a little regime change over there in Syria. He says, what will we get for bombing Syria besides more debt and a possible long-term conflict? Obama needs congressional approval. My goodness, I agree with every word of that statement. Thank God that Trump went and got congressional approval before he started bombing the Syria. Oh, wait, he didn't. Senator Rand Paul, for once, I agree with him. He says, our prior interventions in this region have done nothing to make us safer, and Syria will be no different. So I guess that's enough of the tweets. So why don't we go to your questions? Okay, so first, I will address this question from Dixie Dean. Dixie Dean is a prolific poster on the Daily Stormer BBS, as are most, if not all, of the people whose questions I will be reading. If you're not a member of the Daily Stormer BBS, then you should be. It's very easy. You just go and you put in an email address and a password and sign up. And you're on the Daily Stormer BBS, interacting with Stormers worldwide. And you get to do neat things like interact with this show. Hopefully, moving forward, we'll think of more ways for you to be able to interact and participate, not only with this show, but in other ways. But anyway, Dixie Dean says, personally, I would like to hear commentary from a pre-Trump white nationalist perspective. I think it's evident that the jury is still out on Trump's recent apparent shilling. I'm from a generation of white nationalists that existed pre-MAGA and pre-Trump. Well, me too. I may be like the the oldest Nazi on these tubes. And I've been doing this a while. I was around before doing this stuff all over the place, before Richard Spencer ever even thought about coining the term alt-right. I was definitely around doing this before the alt-right became a thing on social media and the internet and all that. I remember the heady days of 2014, oh, so long ago. The Twitters are a real good example of how things have changed, how rapidly they've changed and just blown up, which is all a great thing. I mean, our movement has, our ranks have swelled like just almost nothing in history. The amount of the speed and the passion with which it has swollen and become Basically, we control these internets. We really do. We run the show on this thing. We are the memeologist. We are the Keck Commandos. But I remember back in like 2014 when I first got on Twitter, it was a huge deal for anybody who was pro-white or white nationalist or anything like that to even get 1,000 followers. I mean, boy, wow, you were big. And there was hardly anybody running around doing the memes to purposely trigger people and such. And I remember it was before all the alt-right thing blew up, it was like me and a couple other guys, one of them also a frequent poster still on the Daily Storm of BBS, a great guy, goes by the handle Lolocaustianity. He's a Scandinavian fellow and an excellent friend to have. And another guy who he got suspended so much, he had several usernames. He was we just called him Ratty, you know, like Jew Rat. He was he started off as like End of Zyklon, and then he was Return of Ratty, and then Ratty's Revenge and all that. And unfortunately, at some point early in 2015, he just disappeared. But I really, really liked that guy. But we were just running around. I mean, we would do things like they used to have a hashtag every Monday on Twitter called Merchant Monday, which is where people went and talked stocks, all these stockbrokers and such. And of course, it was funny because it was called Merchant Monday, and the hashtag was always so full of Jews. And we'd do things like just roll into that hashtag and start posting pictures of piles of bodies at Auschwitz and stuff like that. But yeah, we were just running around triggering people, and people were so shocked at it. And I wasn't just doing it like a kid doing a prank. I already knew that it worked. And it worked well. I learned that from my time when I first got started doing activism on the internet. Was back like in late 2011 when I started doing local government activism here in my little local area. And I learned really fast that the best thing to do is to shock, terrify, humiliate, and make fun of your opponents constantly. Because these people can't take it, and you get them unhinged, and they start making themselves look crazy and stupid, and you're in there. I mean, it's basically it's chaos. You know, just like today. I mean, the whole world is in chaos right now, and our movement's in huge chaos because of this whole Syria thing. And here I am. Calm, because I have known for a long time that chaos is an instrument that I can play like Paganini played the violin, and I don't even have to sell my soul to the devil to do it. but yeah, you know, when you are as I was doing the local government thing, or as we were when we when we were just really, really the outsiders talking about white nationalism and white countries for white people and all that stuff, you sow that chaos. And then in the middle of that whirlwind that you started, you ply your trade. You start putting out your memes and all that. It's worked wonderfully. But yeah, as far as, you know, this goes into another question kind of that someone else asked that I will get to it and address that question itself. But the big thing from the pre-white nationalist perspective is there was always this rift in that community of, can we change things through the electoral process? And people were split pretty much down the middle. And I was always one of these guys who said, well, no, you really can't. And then, you know, Trump came along, and I thought, well, you know, maybe you can. I don't know. but yeah, there are so many alternatives that people have looked to other than the electoral process. One of them, you know, depending on your perspective where you're coming from with this is secession or Balkanization of the United States, which is a thing that I've been for, at least, you know, as far as Texas is concerned. I've always thought, well, you know, if we can just get Texas out of this American Zog government, that as bad a shape as Texas is in, and believe me, you know, demographically, we are in really bad shape, really bad shape. Whites are a minority in Texas now. We're just covered up in these wetbacks, and we've always had tons and tons of black people, and now, you know, all our major metropolitan centers for decades have been getting just flooded with these Arab store, you know, convenience store owners and these dothead motel operators and so forth. But despite all that, you know, going back to the point that I made at the beginning of this segment, if we get ourselves out of this Zog-controlled government and, you know, white people have the right of self-determination again, I believe Texas would solve its demographic problems post-haste. It wouldn't take long at all. I feel the same way for any other state that wants to secede, or, I mean, not necessarily even a state. I mean, you know, like there have been movements for a long time for people like in Northern California to secede from the rest of liberal California. And, you know, you got the guys with the Northwest Front and all that. And I'm not saying I think these things are imminently doable or anything like that. I'm just saying, yeah, it would probably work if you could accomplish it. But, you know, the electoral process is always a thing worth trying. And I guess I, at this point, I should address that before going on to any more questions, I should address the reactions that everybody's having to this. And the reactions are basically twofold, and they're all emotion-based. Okay. The first and most common reaction I see is everyone saying, oh my God, Trump has completely betrayed us. I threw my vote away. And in 2020, I am going to vote against Trump. I don't care who the Democrat is. I totally threw my vote away. Well, okay. Listen. If that's the way you feel, then you were looking at this thing all wrong anyway. And, you know, now that Trump's pulled the Syria thing, I guess I can come out and get explicit about this one more time. I did this several times throughout the campaign to try and keep people on the same page, almost to the point where I thought I was going to ruin the whole narrative, at least for people who read or listened to my stuff. It goes like this. Yes, during the entire campaign and up until now, we have been memeing this narrative into existence about Trump being the glorious leader, the God Emperor, the champion of white people who is going to crush all of our enemies and deport all the beaners and gas all the kikes and all that. But this is a narrative that's made like to meme him into office and to demoralize our enemies. And this sort of thing works. Okay. It absolutely works. It's probably the thing more than anything else that worked when I was doing the local government stuff. And that the local government stuff, I know it's probably boring to a lot of you because you weren't around for it. And it was concerning a little tiny town that none of you have been to and all that. And, you know, in the big scheme of things, it was very insignificant. But the thing is, when you have a thing like this that works on this micro level, it is very likely going to work on a macro level, too. And you got to understand that this town that we were fighting against, they had a whole city government. They had coffers full of money. They had the ear of the local media. They had their own police department that they used against us several times and threatened to use against us in worse ways. And the whole thing got started because a friend of ours, who is now one of the city councilmen, they set him up. They framed him and tried to put him in jail for 60 years over a he accidentally checked the wrong box on a form when he was the foreman of a jury on a turn signal ticket trial. So, you know, they tried to charge him with aggravated perjury. They took him to jail. He had bond out. So this whole thing got started, and it was just three guys. It was Ghost, my former co-host on Hidden Mysteries Radio, this guy Rebel, and myself. We were the three local. I mean, there were some other people on the edges of it who did a little stuff here and there, but these were just people that we knew. They didn't even live here. They didn't do much. Ghost, myself, and this other guy, Rebel, we all lived here locally. Everybody knew who we were, and we trolled these people out of office, and it worked. And the main thing was we declared victory at all times, and we told them, this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, and this is going to happen. And it all happened exactly the way we said it would. And that's pretty much what happened during this election. We, the biggest credit to getting Trump in office, bar none, was the alt-right. Shit posters, podcasters, meme magicians, all that good stuff. That's what got Trump into office. And so, you know, as far as the way all this stuff goes from the pre-white nationalist perspective, I guess that's about it. Basically, all I can say is that there's always been a controversy about whether or not you can change things through going to the ballot box or not. And like I say, you've got these guys who are like, oh, I've thrown my vote away and I'm going to go vote for the Dem and all. Well, they fell for the meme. I've talked to a couple of them, and they deny that. They say, oh, no, I never thought Trump was one of us, but my God, he's betrayed us so bad. And yeah, this is a bad betrayal, bad one. I mean, he said that he was not going to do this, not going to do this, not going to do this. But on the issue of having thrown your vote away, let's examine that for a minute. Let's say you had either not gone and voted for Trump, which was a de facto vote for Clinton, or if you had actually gone and voted for Clinton and she'd gotten arrested. Well, there would be thousands and thousands and thousands more illegals here already than there are now. Because just the fact that Trump got elected and has been talking tough about immigration and all that good stuff, I think the last number that I read is something like illegal border crossings down 67%. And a lot of people, there have been several reports. I mean, even like before he took the oath of office, just between the time that he was elected and the time he took the oath of office, these people were self-deporting. So you've got that. And then add to that, that had Clinton been elected, not only would you have had all these extra Mexicans and all these thousands and thousands of Syrians and Somalians and Eritreans and who knows who else, she would have made all of them citizens. And there would never be another reason for you to go to a ballot box. Had that happened, any chance at ever solving any of this through the ballot box would have been over. Okay? Now, on the other end of things, you have these people who are saying, oh my God, don't criticize Trump. You people have no loyalty and you make the alt-right look ridiculous because you don't have any loyalty. Look, we're not supposed to have loyalty when we elect someone to do one thing and they do another. We're supposed to criticize them. This is not a system where you vote someone into office. Now, this is what the politicians want you to think the system is, and this is the way that it basically has functioned, at least all my life, but it's certainly not the way the system is set up. The way the American system of government is set up is that you vote these people into office, and then you hold them accountable. You know, and one of the reasons that our republic has fallen into such a sorry state of disrepair is that for a republic, you know, a real republic, I mean, we're not talking about a Soviet socialist republic or something here, but a republic, for it to function properly, requires an intelligent, educated, and active citizenry who is involved in politics both locally, statewide, and nationally for the system to function properly. Now, we have given that up over, I guess the majority of the history of the United States. And look where it's gotten us. Look where it's gotten us. It's gotten us on the verge of white genocide. It's gotten us 20-something trillion dollars in debt. It's gotten our military spread out all over the world. It's turned our country black, brown, yellow, and every other color except white. It's turned our children into complete drug addicts and sexual degenerates. It has turned morality on its head. And this is why people hate republics and democracies in our movement so much. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. I mean, I'm not necessarily in that camp. Now, I do hate democracies. I think democracy is the absolute worst form of government. But I also believe that a republic, if you have a moral and racially homogenous society, I believe a republic can be a really good place to live in. But of course, we're not in a situation where any of that even matters. Whether this thing gets changed through the ballot box or other means, we're going to have to take some strong medicine to clean this stuff up. We're going to have some top-down authoritarian government going on for a while that is being directed by someone who actually has our best interests at heart. And at this point, it's hard to know whether that guy is Trump or not. But like I say, I mean, the alternative, Clinton, that would have just been the death knell for anything we've been trying to do. And if this is how you feel moving forward, I'm sorry, but you're being childish. You know, when you have an election, an important election, and neither candidate is someone that you support, you kind of have a responsibility to try and decipher if one is less bad than the other, and to go vote for that less bad one. It's a devil's bargain, I know. It sucks, I know. But, you know, that's life. Like in 2012, or let me go back for the night, in 2008, I was a Ron Paul guy, and that was the only thing that even got me out of the house, you know, was I was going voting for Ron Paul. I was actually a lot more involved in that. I was a precinct chairman, a delegate to the county convention and all that stuff. But that's a story for another day. But, you know, and I wasn't supporting Ron Paul because of the Moweed and the Lowellbergtarianism and all that. I was supporting Ron Paul because his policies were going to dismantle a lot of the stuff. You know, if he got in power and was able to do it, they were going to dismantle a lot of the things that I knew were the things that were killing us. He wanted to audit that Fed and do away with the Fed. He wanted to end the foreign wars. He said that there was no such thing as birthright citizenship anywhere in the Constitution or any of its amendments, and he was absolutely correct, and he was going to put an end to that. And there were a lot of other things that I really liked about Ron Paul before he started switching things up in 2012. Although I knew that, you know, this libertarianism stuff is, you know, it's not going to cut it, but this guy's a whole lot better than the others. If I had only had the choice of John McCain or Barack Obama, I wouldn't have even gone, you know. And then and basically I knew I was throwing my vote away too. And I went and threw it away because I thought that it was part of a broader movement that was going to keep moving forward. But it basically just fell apart after the election, as so many of these things have. And then 2012 comes along, and you've got the devil's bargain of Barack Obama or Mitt Romney. As bad as I hated Mr. Magic Underwear, I can tell you with no shame whatsoever that on Election Day 2012, I went to my local polling place and cast my vote for that Mormon fuck. of course, did not win, but I believe that at least based on what he said on the campaign trail, as milquetoast and crappy as most of it was, that he would have been an improvement over Obama. He would have done less damage. So, you know, that's the adult way of looking at this. So, yeah, I mean, like I say, I'm not throwing Trump under the bus. I'm telling you the truth about what's going on here. I think he's being influenced by the wrong people in conjunction with a bunch of shady, underhanded stuff going on with the deep state that makes the convincing that much easier. And, you know, and another possibility here that I really hope is not true is that Kushner convinced him to do this, and other people, Kushner, Cohn, a bunch of others, convinced him to do this by hammering on him the fact that, well, you know, look at Bush, at W. Bush's numbers and Bush Sr.'s numbers. Look at what happened to their numbers when they declared war, their approval ratings. They just went through the roof. And, you know, if you'll bomb some brown people, then your numbers will go through the roof too, and they won't be able to call you a Russian puppet anymore, and you'll probably be able to push through some of your agenda. So, you know, if that's the case, I sure hope that's not the case, because I certainly, you know, even though they're just brown people, I mean, let's be real. I'm not for going spending millions of dollars and killing a bunch of people to juice the current president's approval ratings so he can fiddle around with the tax code, which unfortunately is the next thing on the agenda. You know, these rhino Republican conservatives for decades now. You get them into office, and there's two things that they want to do that nobody wants them to do, you know, at least until they solve a bunch of other problems. They want these rhinos, they get in there and they want to bitch about, you know, the health care. They want to tamper with health care and see what they can do with that. And then they want to get in there and they want to manipulate the tax code. Well, one of the biggest themes throughout the campaign is, you know, everybody's sick of hearing about changing a decimal point here and there in the tax code. That's not going to save our race. You know, we want a wall. We want illegals deported. We want fair trade, where we, you know, the countries who import allow us to export to them. And just, we want law and order. We want illegals deported. And these are all the things that Trump ran on. And when he got into office, what did he do? Well, he decided to fiddle with health care first. And when that didn't work, next we go for the tax code. In the meantime, Americans are still being raped, assaulted, and killed by illegals. we're still getting screwed over bigly by all our trading partners. And apparently we're at war again. Or not again, but we're in another one. It's not again because we've been in multiple wars forever. All right, let me see if I can find another question here. All right, here's the one that I referenced that I said I would get to. This is from Cromulent Word on the Daily Storm of BBS. He asks, during the campaign, I was always skeptical that meaningful change could be achieved within the system, and the events of the last couple of days have only increased that skepticism. I'm curious if you think that change is possible through the system, or if you think the deep state is too entrenched in the nation's institutions to be dislodged. If it is too entrenched, what do you think our options are? Well, I covered most of that, but I didn't hit the deep state part of it. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest problems right now is that our government is being run by this deep state. And, you know, they have their agenda. And whenever somebody gets in there who is even mildly against that agenda, they focus all their guns on them. And it may be too entrenched. And so I guess the options would be, you know, one option would be if Trump would quit listening to these Jews, this Kushner and Cohn, and let Bannon loose
and you know, act like the person that he was on the campaign trail for once, I think they could get in there and root this stuff out. It would take a while, and his agenda would be blocked for a while, but I think that ultimately, in a matter of months, it could be done. And, you know, especially if he brought in some really good expert advisors, or not advisors, but operatives who were loyal to him and who knew the ins and outs of the deep state to get in there and root these bastards out. But instead, it would appear that the deep state is being appeased with some, you know, missile action. All right, Mr. Bond. Everybody knows Mr. Bond. Mr. Bond is the greatest rapper in the alt-right. He asks, how about discussing the best meme propaganda strategies for the anti-war effort and for getting Trump back in line? Well, I haven't thought much about this. Now, whether or not Trump can be got back in line or not is a debatable thing. But I think, as I said before, it is our responsibility to criticize him and try to push him in our direction. As far as the memes go, I was watching some videos from the live streams of Richard Spencer's anti-war protest yesterday. And, you know, you had the Antifa out there trying to shut them down. And they were saying, why is Antifa out here trying to shut down an anti-war protest? Now, you just start on that as a jumping off point for your thinking. And it leads you in a lot of directions that the memeing can go forward with. And, you know, I do know a little bit about memeing. And I got to tell you, you know, you have to look at all your possible angles, and you know, it's basically when you start memeing, you know, it's basically like what the marketers and such say. Well, we'll just throw some shit against the wall and see what sticks. and so there are several ways you could go with this. You know, you could say, why is Trump fighting a war that the Democrats and the neocons are all for, you know, and I'm not saying to do it that way. I'm saying that's what your theme would be with your memeing. Another one, that's basically where you go at it from. But, and the other thing is just to hammer him about that he's lied to us, because, you know, Trump is a very egotistical man and he wants to be admired and respected and liked and all that. And, I'm pretty sure that he's smart enough that he knows that whatever these poll numbers he has now that may have gone up, that they are being faked as much as the poll numbers that said things like that Hillary Clinton was going to win by a landslide, or that Ted Cruz or Jeb Bush or whoever was going to be the nominee. So that's not even real, but it's very easy. All you have to do is go anywhere on these tubes where they're discussing this, and you can see that he is rapidly losing his base. If he doesn't do a quick about face and start fulfilling some of these promises, then he's going to be a one-term loser. He's going to be a George Bush senior. That's what he's going to be, and he's going to deserve it and worse. But, you know, it's so hard to try to decipher what's going on behind the scenes just based on these media reports. These media reports are all based on inside unnamed sources and stuff like that. So, you know, the inside unnamed source could be lying. The reporter could just be making them up. I've said before that, you know, I'm just going to start making wild claims when I write things on Daily Storm or whatever. I'll make the most insane, wild, outlandish claims and say, you know, we have an anonymous source inside the deep state who says, boy, you know, there's just a certain contingent of people who will believe anything as long as you claim an anonymous source. But anyway, let's get to another question. I don't know if I answered that one or not. But let's go to another one. All right, here's a good one. This is from Captain Von Crunch. Captain Von Crunch, very intelligent fellow, makes great posts. Captain Von Crunch asks, how much do you think this is connected to oil versus globalism in general? What can we do as a collective to not be disenchanted and lose momentum? And do you think Keck will require human sacrifice? Well, I'll answer the last question first. Yes. Well, yes and no. Keck will not require a human sacrifice. Keck requires millions. Millions of human sacrifices. At least 6 million. And if that's not enough, another 6 million. Let's see. Let me take the rest of it one at a time. How much do you think this is connected to oil versus globalism in general? Well, I think the two are intertwined in a way that makes it real hard to separate them. But yeah, the oil most likely has something to do with it. It seems like I can't remember the name of the pipeline, but there's some oil or gas pipeline that we were wanting to run through there, and Assad has put the kibosh on it. So, you know, that never helps. You mess with big oil and generally you end up with a bunch of American soldiers up your ass. what can we do as a... And, of course, the globalism thing, before I go to his next question, the globalism thing's big. You know, Assad's Syria is one of the few countries that that was on the hit list because they were not involved in the global Jewish fiat monetary system. They weren't in on that. They didn't want any part of it. And funnily enough, every other country on Earth that was not involved in that system, other than North Korea, has either been invaded or, through the machinations of our intelligence services, has had an Arab Spring or something like that happen to them, which brought them immediately into line and got them on that Jewish fiat money system. And, this central banking nonsense. Okay, he says, what can we do as a collective to not be disenchanted and lose momentum? Okay, I'm going to tell you right now. The thing that we as a collective need to remember is that each and every one of you out there, whether you call yourselves an alt-right person or a pro-white person or a nationalist or a Nazi or, you know, however it is you identify, each and every one of you, you are badass. You are who caused Trump to get elected in the first place. You are the ones with the power. We all need to realize that. All the power is within us. It's not something that we borrow or that we have given to us at the mercy of our so-called leaders. It's something that we actually allow our so-called leaders to use. And the minute we realize that, then we can take a little bit better control over it. But, man, just keep doing the same thing you've been doing. Just shift your focus onto whatever the topic of the day is. And never forget, we have made a ton of progress. And so whether Trump, I absolutely hope that he follows through with the most important parts of his campaign promises as far as the immigration, the border wall, all that good stuff goes. But even if he doesn't, you take the governmental part out of it and look at the way we've been able to capitalize on this. Trump didn't capitalize on us. We capitalized on him. He announced he was going to run for president one day, and the next thing you know, he said Mexicans are rapists, and the alt-right just started blowing up. Well, there's no reason for us to lose momentum now. I mean, our numbers are still growing. There will be other candidates. There will be other initiatives. And on top of all that, I mean, you've got like your Daily Stormer book clubs and TRS pool parties and stuff. Get together, make plans, hold demonstrations, do in real life activism. Set up your websites, do your podcasts, aspire to greatness. All right, let's see. Let's see if we can find another question or two before we either end the show or move on to another topic. Okay, here's a good question. Well, I guess combination comment question from Kennedy. And Kennedy sports one of my favorite avatars that I see people use. It's the Tyrone McNigger cartoon face. Kennedy says, as I'm calling for a troll raid, do you remember InfoWars' Leanne McBoobs? Oh, I certainly do remember Leanne McBoobs, also known as Leanne McAdoo. She's Alex Jones's new girlfriend, and she is hotter than the devil's balls, but unfortunately she's been tainted by dark meat, as Kennedy points out here. She used to date a nigger, but we managed to end that with just endless Twitter trolling. It was a small victory. She will not birth nigglets. Could we use the same strategy to remove Kushner? I think he is not on Twitter, but Ivanka is. If something happened to their relationship, Donald should side with his daughter and kick Kushner out and promote, or I think he meant would Donald side with his daughter and kick Kushner out and promote Bannon. Well, it's a good idea, but I don't think it'll work. And that's not me saying not to do it, man. I mean, get out there and troll people. I mean, the trolling is good. Trolling works. But the thing is now, I mean, you got to understand, Ivanka has been raised in the media spotlight her entire life. And I don't think trolling, no matter how big a scale it's on social media, will really get to her. And the other thing is, you know, do we even know if she does her own tweets? Which the reason I ask that, and I'm not saying someone else composes her tweets for her or whatever. I'm just saying, is she the person who's actually tapping on that phone or typing on that computer to put those tweets out? Because if she's not, you know, if she's like got an assistant or something and she says, hey, so-and-so, run over there and tweet for me how offended I am at the gassed brown babies. You know, if something like that's the case, she's not even going to see your trolling tweets. But having been grown up in the media spotlight, especially with a father who has always been a controversial guy, even though, you know, he was basically beloved by most all of America before he decided to become a politician. You know, he was always a controversial guy. There was always crazy stuff coming out about him in the tabloids and such. So I would think that, you know, I think earlier in the New York Times article, I read that she's 35. I think that at this point in her life, you know, she's a billionaire. And she's married to this big international Jew. And like I say, all her life she's been doing this. I don't think that stuff's going to affect her. And I think, you know, if you do this with the goal that if I do this enough, it's going to break up their relationship, you're going to be disappointed. But please, man, do your troll thing if you want and see what comes of it. I've never seen anything bad happen from trolling. I've seen things not happen the way people wanted, or, you know, not really come to much. But yeah, troll raids really work. But as far as the thing about our troll raiding ending Leanne McAdoodle's relationship with her personal Tyrone, I don't believe that. I think what ended that was her opportunity to spread her legs for Alex Jones and, you know, be part of all those big InfoWars bucks. Anyhow, let's see if we have any more questions. Okay, well, we have one more question that I think is worth answering here. This is just a fun one, totally off topic. Fott Doppler, my good buddy Fott Doppler, one of our favorite Canadians, Total Bro, asks, what is your favorite pro-white movie? And my, and of course, he spells favorite incorrectly, the way the British do. For some reason, the Canadians have never learned to spell American style, which is correct. But, you know, he's got that U in favorite. But anyway, this I'll give the same answer today that I gave as a short answer on the BBS. My favorite pro-white movie is Roots. I like the overseer dude with the whip and all. He's a very good role model for the kiddos. But seriously, the reason I decided to answer that again on the air is I was having this discussion in a chat the other day. An interesting thing about that overseer character is he's played by Vic Morrow. Now, for those of you not in the... Now, most people... Or not most, I guess, because it's been so long since the guy was around. But at one time, most people would have known who Vic Morrow was because he was a big actor and he was a director. And his first starring role was in a series in the 60s on TV called Combat. It was a big World War II series. And he was in a bunch of big movies like Blackboard Jungle, God's Little Acre, Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, the original Bad News Bears. Morrow was a big-time crypto Jew. His real name was Victor Morozov. He was born in the Bronx to what they call a middle-class Jewish family on Wikipedia. And he was always starring in these anti-white roles. A good example of that being that overseer. You know, the overseer is coarse and violent and ignorant and counterproductive and all this stuff. You know, just a typical, stereotypical leftist's idea of a white person before everybody got enlightened in the 60s and all. But Morrow died on the set of, I'm pretty sure, what he would have considered, at least up to that point, his prime anti-white achievement. And that was, there was a movie in the early 1980s called Twilight Zone, the movie. It was a movie version of the TV series. And Morrow starred in the, it was like several directors who, they each, you know, the different directors would direct these different vignettes. I believe there were four of them in it. And Morrow was in the first one, and it was a morality tale about how evil and racist white people are and always have been, where it starts off in this bar, and Morrow is complaining because his promotion that he was wanting was given to a Jew, and he starts hollering about niggers living a few blocks from him and all that. He gets everybody in the club upset, and he storms out of the place, and when he walks outside the club, suddenly he's in Nazi Germany, and they're assuming he's a Jew, which is funny and confusing to this conversation because he is an actual Jew, the actor, but he was playing a non-Jew. So these Nazis confuse him as a Jew, and they behave like the typical evil Hollywood Nazis. And this particular segment, by the way, was directed by Jew John Landis. And this segment ruined his career, which I'll tell you in a little bit why. But then, you know, Morrow runs off and he escapes the Nazis, and suddenly he finds himself in this forest. And it turns out that this forest is like early 1900s in the American South. And he's a black, they all think he's a black dude now. And all these evil Klansmen are chasing him with ropes and burning crosses. And then he runs and runs from them, and he jumps into this water to try to swim and get away from him. When he comes up from the water, suddenly he's in Vietnam, and all these evil soldiers think he's a gook, and they blow him up with a hand grenade and all. He died on that set along with a couple of little Yarrow Chirons. Because there was a scene in it where he's trying to save this Gook kid, and this American chopper is hovering just above him. And the guy flying the chopper apparently had a heart attack, and the thing flipped over, and the rotors went kablooey right into Morrow and the Gook kid. And so I guess that was God's punishment on Morrow. But anyhow, I hope you have all enjoyed this week's episode of, I almost said Hidden Mysteries Radio, this week's episode of the Crypto Report. We're going to be back next week. We're going to be more on the regular format. We'll have a guest. We'll have our segments and all that good stuff. I hope everybody enjoyed the new music. I know I really like it. We've got a fellow who is a pro sound engineer doing this for us, these bumpers and intro music and all for us. Go check us out on SoundCloud. Follow us there. Read the Daily Stormer every day. I was on Beards and Beardly's live stream last night, so watch for that whenever it gets posted. Donate to your favorite podcast, websites, all that good stuff. Go join that Daily Stormer BBS. Go to the book club section. Find your local Daily Stormer book club. Get involved with those people. Start going to book club meetings if they're not having them. Organize some. Remember that future white children are depending on you. Don't despair. See you next week.